It's been 84 years.
It's okay. Just try to remember anything. Anything at all.
Whoa. Okay, that's a bit of an exaggeration on the 84 years, but it has been a while. And I'll get into that. Basically, just life things, that kind of thing. But yeah, let's get right on into it. Filling your ear holes. Welcome to the RetroPixel podcast, where I fill the best part of your day with a healthy dose of vitamin J. I am James, and let's get right on into it. I'm going to start this off by saying that, kind of getting back into the swing of these things, I know some people like a little bit of a synopsis of what the show is going to be. I didn't pre-write anything out, so I'll try and put that in the podcast description. That way you can jump around to whatever you want sort of thing. And I'll leave the life stuff till the very end regardless, just so that it doesn't impede the rest of the quote, gaming goodness. Anyways, I'm going to get right on into River City Girls. This game is so freaking good for itching that nostalgia scratch that it has made me come back to record this show. Yeah, it's that good. Like, I've wanted to come back to record this for multiple months. And just things. That's just all I can say, things. Like I said, I'll get into that garbage at the end. But River City Girls, I was immediately interested in this as soon as I saw the trailer for it. And I was like, oh, you know what? It's probably going to be, I don't know, I'm guessing in the $19.99 to $24.99 range. To my surprise, it was actually $39 plus tax for us up here in Canada, so cheaper for you guys up in the States. And I was a little bit apprehensive, but I still bought it day one. I was like, yeah, it's a lot of money for a digital game. Like, yeah, you know what? I'm just going to bite the bullet on this one and give it a go. And I have not regretted it at all. I mean, none. There are some very, very minor, and I mean, when I say minor gripes, it doesn't mean like criticisms, just minor things that I found could kind of takes you a bit out of the elements. But overall, this is my game of the year that I have played for 2019. I absolutely adored it. I have put in enough time that I have completed the main story. I believe that gets me to roughly 54% completion. There's obviously going to be a ton of side quests and stuff that I have to complete on top of that. Plus, you unlock extra characters upon completing it for the first time. Not trying to spoil anything, but that's probably not too much of a spoiler. A lot of games will offer extras once you complete the game. Yeah, fantastic though. The battling, great. The animation, great. The sprites look fantastic. This isn't quite NES quite style graphics. I would say it's an enhanced Super Nintendo. It's almost like an in-between of Super Nintendo and, say, the Saturn, which was an awesome 2D powerhouse. It's sort of like an in-between of both of those for 90% of the game. The only part of it that kind of takes you out of that nostalgic element is the cutscenes, which, don't get me wrong, are absolutely gorgeously animated. They're fantastically done. Great voiceover work. And it's not even a criticism. It's almost like it would have made more sense to do those animated cutscenes in the same old bit style that the rest of the game was, but you know what, it's like I said, it's not even a gripe. I would have liked to have seen that option as a way to do it, but the cutscenes that they do have in there with I'm gonna call it, you know, HD visuals, but I mean, they look gorgeous the way that they're animated and all. Excellently done. It kept me, at least, and I imagine anyone else that grew up playing River City Ransom on the NES, it keeps you tied big time. And what's really great about this one is it really keeps you invested because there's so many different things that you can unlock in terms of movesets. When you have the original RCR, yeah, you can pick up some weapons and this and that, but there's very little in terms of flavor or variety. And then you get this game, which you can get all sorts of different kinds of attack moves, and it just really changes the game, no pun intended, to keep it fresh and really, really fun. Like, areas where you would get stomped previously, you get a new moveset, whether it be through the dojo or just by leveling up. And then you can go back and like, oh man, these characters that I was having a hard time against, say, an hour ago, going back to that screen, now you have a new move that's like, oh man, now I can really defend myself and kick them halfway across the screen sort of thing. But and it changes it up as you go along the game. There's always going to be a new enemy that pops into frame that you haven't seen before, and it's like, oh, I wonder what this guy is going to be doing or what this female has against me. And they'll pull something out of their hat that's just like, holy crap, now I, you know, it came out of left field. And it's great. It's absolutely, like I said, I can't rave about this enough. I mean, this is I'm kind of call this an unbiased review. Spoiler alert, I friggin' loved it, though. I'm actually have my hands up in the air saying that. But it's just, personally, if you're into the old nostalgic beat-em-ups, just go ahead and spend the money on this now. Just do it. Don't wait for a sale. It's worth, at least for me, it was worth the $40 that I spent. Like I said, our friends in the United States and elsewhere likely will be able to get it cheaper on the digital stores. There is a physical copy that I'm debating buying because I loved it so much. I think that's through Limited Run or whatever, which, you know, that'll cost me the earth. But regardless, like I said, it's really, really, it just feels like it's not even padded out to the point where it feels like they added too much or it was given too much fluff. It has just enough to keep you invested and wanting to play through all the way to the end. Like I said, I'm not one to marathon a game all the way through. I bought this on launch day, what was it, Thursday the 5th? And I was into it enough that I had to do multiple hour sittings until I saw the end screen on the Sunday night. And like I said, I'm still not done. There's still a ton of extras that I need to go back for. And I'm actually invested enough to go back and 100% this because I enjoyed it that much. And that's normally not something that I'm into. I don't do collect-a-thons and all that kind of stuff. And anything else, I definitely want 100% this one. I just have to see that screen. But yeah, even like the storyline is great. I don't want to spoil too much of that, but there's a lot of shopping and stuff. And even this is kind of where it kind of blew me away that I was really into it. And like I sat there after the first, I think it was maybe a couple hours, and I was like, I clued in. I am bra shopping for an accessory to like add a different stat to my character. I'm like, this game has absolutely mastered it to have me genuinely excited to be bra shopping in a video game in order to make my stats better for my fighting style that I need at that specific time. And there's other things too. There's all sorts of girly things. They girled it up, and they girled it up in the best possible way. There's like makeup and chokers and, you know, panties and bottoms, and the list goes on. And it's also got that nice Japanese flair to it as well, with like, you know, sushi and all that kind of stuff. You could go to the drugstore, buy things. They do have the sauna, which is really cool that they brought that back from the original. It's just a really, really fantastic, and I have to stop talking about it because I'm just going to make this like an hour-long show of me saying how much I loved River City Girls, but I really, really cannot emphasize enough how much it is worth grabbing. If you have any interest in beat-em-up brawlers, this is one that you do not want to miss out on, 100%. All right, next up, I'm going to take a look at the Sega Genesis Mini. I'm sure we all know about it, but normally these mini consoles, I was kind of on the fence originally, but they're kind of gaining a little bit of flavor with me. I love the HDMI out. That's a given. Yeah, and then, of course, there's the quote-unquote modding community that opens them up to allow you to put on a chunk of extra titles. And that's kind of where the real appeal is for me. You can add like your entire library that you want into one tiny little box, HDMI out. Yes, there's something to be said about playing on the original hardware. I am a big fan of that. That's no secret. I've said that before. I have an HDMI converter that goes from the regular composite cables in through composite and out through HDMI. That's how I do a lot of my game streaming. If I'm going to be playing anything, it's generally on the original hardware. It's pretty rare that I will grab the NES Classic or the Super Nintendo Classic or whatever and play off of those, with the exception of the save states, because that just makes it so much friggin' easier on some of those titles. It makes it a lot easier. Let's just say that. I know a lot of people say, oh, that's not the right way to play the game. It's not legit beat. Well, I'm not saying a direct screw you, but for your morals of that not being a direct beat, screw you. I don't care. I saw an end screen, and as long as I had fun with it, I really don't care. As long as I had fun with my time. I don't want to play something to be agonized to, you know, the wit's end that I just want to chuck it across the room. I don't mind a hard game, and if I'm really invested in a hard game, then I will do the work to legitimately beat it. But if I just want to casually enjoy it till the end, I do enjoy save states. But nonetheless, let's go through some of the more notable titles on this thing, at least from my point of view. Yes, there's a lot of regular fluff that you can get from flea markets and all that stuff for dirt cheap, or you likely already have on your shelf today. But some of these are actually pretty darn expensive. Castlevania Bloodlines, I know that's one that's fairly pricey. Going through the list here, like I said, there's a lot here that's... like, there's some good games that I'm definitely glossing over, like Gunstar Heroes. That's not stupidly expensive. It's not cheap. I think it's roughly 30 to 40 bucks loose. I could be out to lunch on that. It's been a while since I looked it up. Fantastic game, though. Let's see. You know, Earthworm Jim, that's a good game. It's stupidly cheap. What's some of the more noteworthies? Contra Hard Corps. I know that one definitely carries a decent price tag. Never played it. That's actually one of the reasons why I kind of want to sit through it, as much as I could just do an Everdrive and do it that way. Like I said, these things are cute, and they have the save states, which you don't have with the original carts, or at least a lot of them. Ghouls and Ghosts. That one's not stupidly expensive either, but that is different on the Sega hardware. It's not bad. I do have that legit cart, and I've barely made a dent in it, because, spoiler, Ghouls and Ghosts games are stupidly hard. Tetris, that's a huge one. That was added extra, I believe, because it was originally 40, and then that was one of the two extras, so it's like 42 now. Monster World 4, I've raved about that before. It was a digital release that was translated to English on the Xbox 360. Phenomenal game. It's even cooler that you're getting it on this package now for an actual Genesis. That's dope. Really loving that. Like I said, there's probably a few others in here that I'm kind of gloss. Oh, geez, how could I gloss over that one? Mega Man, The Willy Wars. We never got that over here. I believe that was a PAL European exclusive. I believe it carries a stupid value too. So that's kind of cool. To the best of my knowledge, it's what? Mega Man 1 and 2, possibly 3. It's like the first handful of Mega Man games that was aired on NES. Only, I'm going to use this term loosely because I know it's not correct. Let's call them remastered in 16-bit. So that'd be pretty cool to sit through that too. I'm really looking forward to that. But nonetheless, these consoles, like I said, they don't really have that much appeal to me, except for the fact that when people open them up and it's like, okay, well, now I can chuck in an entire library of what I kind of want to go with. If I'm going up to a cottage weekend and it's going to be a rainy night and you're kind of stuck inside, it's kind of cool for that kind of thing. I don't want to lug my HDMI converter and 20 cartridges and a bunch of other crap with me when I could throw this tiny little handheld cube or rectangle, whatever you want to call it, square. It's thin, it's small. You could chuck that into any bag with a couple of controllers and a USB power brick, and you're laughing. So it's good for things like that, and to just take over to a buddy's house and have a couple of drinks. Again, you're not carting a whole bunch of crap with you. You're bringing one tiny item that will fit into a small grocery bag. So yeah, these little consoles, they, like I said, I'm in the middle. Like, I mean, they kind of could be looked at being junky. Look at PlayStation Classic. That thing was a bloody nightmare. But that thing was also very poorly put together in terms of their side. It looks like Sega has done virtually everything right on this. It's not one of those crappy at games things that get shoveled out into the discount bins. This actually looks like a pretty decent quality product. People that have gotten early hands-on have said that it's fairly much in the same line of quality as the Nintendo Classics that we've seen. So, yeah, I will be getting one. Okay, and if that wasn't enough, there was also announced this year, over the summer, a TurboGrafx 16 Mini. Now, that was way, way more interesting than the Sega Genesis one and virtually any of the other ones that I've heard so far. And the reason for that is because the TurboGrafx-16 has a control pad that has, I'm going to call them speed selector switches. I'm sure they do, I could be mispronunciating exactly what it is, but for me, it's like, you know, being able to select different speeds and that kind of thing, and your jump height. It's basically a varying selector for different attributes on games. That's the terminology I was looking for, not just speed. It does varying attributes versus on multiple games that you play. That is something that is so much better when you own the original controller. Like I said, again, I've had a Turbo Collection. I've been slowly selling that off just because it's too stupidly expensive to collect for. And don't get me wrong, I love the TurboGrafx. It's got some, it has a lot of crapware, don't get me wrong, but it has a lot of really good games too. And that controller is so much fun to play games with. You can randomly change what you need on the fly just with a quick flick of your thumb up. Trying to do that through emulation and stuff, it's not the same. I'm sorry, I've tried it. It is not the same. You can try to add that speed, you know, the selector switch to other buttons, and you double click it and triple click it to cycle through and whatnot. It's not the same through emulation. It really isn't. So when I found out that this thing was coming out, that was my first thought. I'm like, are they giving you a controller that actually has those selector switches on it? To my relief, they are, so thank goodness. I'm down for this thing. I've already said this before on a forum post, I believe it was on STC Pod, just how reasonably priced this thing is. To just go out and buy just a naked open box, you know, sorry, not open box, unboxed, just a console with the controller, the power, and your video cable, which I think is just any generic, we call it coax cable, it's not anything special. To get just the console loose easily runs you around, what did I sell mine for at the last BGE? So the last BGE that I vended, I sold mine with a copy of Keith Courage for, I think I got $140 for it. And that, I gave the guy an alright deal. It was in good condition, it had the backplate, it wasn't missing anything. By backplate, I mean, like, you know, there's this rear port cover. A lot of them are missing. Mine had that. It was complete. It was as complete as you can get without a box. And even gave the guy the pack-in game. So the console alone is generally going to cost you, at least here in Canada, around between $120 and $150. That's about the average that you're going to expect to pay for the thing. You haven't even put a single game into that. And the TurboGrafx Classic is going to be, I believe, $99 US, so call it, $129 here in Canada. Still worth it. Still friggin' worth it for me, because, again, you're going to have people that are going to unlock that thing, and games that were stupidly expensive that you never thought you'd be able to, you know, play, well, besides emulation, which, again, like I said, emulation isn't the same because you don't have that controller. You can play properly with that joypad through an HDMI connection, and it's going to be dope. Let's see, they added this at the very end, Splatterhouse. That was a glaring omission. I think they probably added that because of the fan backlash saying, where the hell is Splatterhouse? Myself included. Let's see, Galaga 88. That's going to be dope. Oh, man, I will say there is about half of the games, or more than half, I believe, are Japanese. Some of them you do need to know Japanese, so you're going to be screwed to try and play that. Like, I mean, the Japanese RPGs and stuff, you're done. But there are going to be some Japanese releases that you don't need to know any Japanese language. You could just fudge your way through the menus and be able to play the game without any hindrance. But let's see, Airzonk, that's stupidly expensive. Alien Crush, that's an amazing pinball game. I played the crap out of that when I was a kid. I think that's semi-expensive. Blazing Lasers, expensive. Bomberman 93. Bonk's Revenge. There's tons, oh my goodness. Again, I'm probably going to be glossing over a few that other people like better than me. I'm just going with the ones here. Let's see, Parasol Stars, dope. Ninja Spirit, holy crap, Ninja Spirit is fantastic. I put a ton of hours into that one. Stupidly hard, but rewarding. You got Yee's book 1 and 2. You call it Dracula X. Like, I mean, it's... The list goes on. It's going to be... There is so much good thrown in this thing. Even just throw out, like, all of the Japanese titles that you can't play. This is still an incredible bargain. And like I said, someone's going to open it up and you're going to be able to put the entire library on there. That copy of Magical Chase that you thought you'd never buy because it's, what, $5,000 in the case or whatever? I guarantee at some point someone's going to unlock this thing and you're going to have the entire library, you're going to have a proper controller, you're going to have it through HDMI, it's going to look beautiful. I got to say, TurboGrafx games generally look fairly vibrant and beautiful anyways, even through a crappy coax connection. So to get them through a nice vibrant HDMI is going to just be glorious. Alright, I'd like to pop this on into this episode's sponsor, which paid an exorbitant amount of money to be on the show mentioned, and that is the Barry Game Exchange. Fantastic show, absolutely wonderful event. There's going to be all sorts of local YouTubers, there's going to be all sorts of local Cartridge Club members, there is going to be a slew, and I do mean an absolute slew, of vendors. There's so much, I'm going to use the word crap, but I use it in the best possible way. There's so much crap that it is overwhelming in terms of what you can find there. I've gotten some fantastic titles there in the past that I otherwise would not have done. Some of that was, you know, I've vended there before. I'm vending actually this time again, but there's been other times where I've vended and like, okay, I sold, you know, a couple $100 worth of stuff. I'm like, screw it, I want a copy of Lunar, The Eternal Blue. I would generally not pay the money for that out of my own pocket, but because I sold a bunch of stuff, I'm like, eh, screw it. I'm going to grab that, I'm going to put it on my shelf, I'm going to eventually someday enjoy that. That's where I kind of get some of my more pricey stuff, because I've offloaded. I don't really look at it as, technically it's money made to a point, but it's not really any money out of my pocket when I spend it. And I don't go there, you know, I don't go there and make $300 and then spend $300 or anything like that. I'll go there, let's say if I make $250, I'll buy one pricey-ish game at like $150 and then go home with $100 in my pocket, that kind of thing. So I don't go there and just blow every cent that, you know, I vended for. But it is a nice way to add some new things on your shelf that you otherwise might not have grabbed. And that show is a fantastic place to do it because there is such variety. And another thing that I love and absolutely adore getting there is MVS carts for the Neo Geo cabinet. I'm not going to say that those things are impossible to find. I have gotten them in the wild before, say Kijiji, that kind of thing. But I'm talking years ago. This is before people jacked the prices of those things up stupidly. I've gotten more than half of my collection for that arcade machine at the Barry Game Exchange shows, 100%. I've probably gotten, I think, maybe two or three out of my entire set that I own downstairs has maybe come from the Durham show. And then you take the other 80% of the carts that I got down there, they came from BGE, and then the other handful of like four or five I got on Kijiji and that kind of thing. So Barry is a great way to find insane stuff that you otherwise would not get your hands on. And yeah, some of the arguments that I've heard before is, well, you just go on eBay. Nah, screw that. I'm paying shipping. I'm generally paying and stupidly overpriced. Well, not all the time, but you're generally paying market price. Generally, it's overpriced, don't get me wrong. But you're generally paying market price. Whereas you go to a local show like this, you can barter. Like the last time I got three MVS carts, and I said to the guy, I'm looking at him like, you know, I think it was like $150 or $160 was what they all added up to. And I, you know, I sort of hummed and hawed, and I go to the guy, I'm like, you know, I'm going to throw you an offer. It's near the end of the day. Sometimes these guys just don't want to cart the crap back home, and you got to try. So I haggled with him. I think I threw him an offer of, I think it was $120. Yeah, it was $120 I threw him. And he's looking at it, and he's like, that's like $30 or $40 less than what the whole lot was going to cost originally if he'd sold them throughout the day. He wanted to make a sale right at the end of the day. You know, these vendors, the good ones at least, are motivated to move it rather than carry it back. he came back at me and he's like, tell you what, I'll still cut you a heck of a deal, but at least make me feel good at winning. Give me $125 for it. Which I did. I gave him $125. It was worth it. One of those games alone, I believe, when I looked it up, like I said, I generally had a rough idea what they were worth, but I didn't really know. But one of them, I was like, I'm pretty sure this one here nearly covers the entire cost, and I'm getting the other two for free. I came home, looked it up. I think that cart had an average sale value on eBay of like $110. So I did very well getting all three of them for $125. And that's just the type of thing that I experience at the Barrie Game Exchange. And you can as well. It's worth the drive. You might be thinking to yourself, oh, that's an hour drive away from me. That's a 90-minute drive for me. Guess what? For me, it's like an hour and 45 minutes. Sometimes an hour and a half if it's really good traffic. But for the most part, I'm generally looking at 1:45 to 2-hour ride. Getting up there one way and then coming back is the same. Worth it. Get in your car. If you need to carpool with a couple of buddies, make a day of it. It's a great time. $10, I believe, gets you in for early admission. $5 for regular admission. You can find it all online. You can follow them on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. Tell you what, I'm just rambling at this point. I'm going to put all the feeds that I can think of for the Barrie Game Exchange in the podcast description. I'll try and throw in the website, the Twitter feed, all that junk. I'm going to chuck it in there. You can look it up. It is happening this Sunday, though, that I am actually, well, I'm uploading this before this Sunday, but this episode comes out within the week of the Sunday of that show happening. So you hear this episode within the first 3-4 days of it going air, you have not missed the show, and I highly encourage you to make that drive to do it. I will say, for legal purposes here at the end, Hodge just paid absolutely no money for this promotion. This is of my own free will. No, please don't send any lawyers after me. No exorbitant fee was paid. This was out of my own goodwill to hype for the Barrie Game Exchange. Please call off those lawyers. All right, lastly, into the what I did over the summer kind of thing, kind of where this show kind of went into the toilet for uploads. Not planned that way, just things get in the way, and then you look at it and like, oh, I'm 1 day late, oh, I'm 3 days late, oh, damn, I'm a month late, oh, crap, that's 2 months late, and it spiraled. But nonetheless, I had to kind of take a break from things for my own sanity, and I gotta tell you, I am in a happier place than I've been in quite a while. Firstly, I will go into having a job change. I had moved from my one crap hole, which I have not been able to discuss ever before, and I still can't because I signed an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement. I don't think they would ever find out if I did talk about them, but it was for a year of whenever you leave. And like, obviously I signed it when I was employed there, but it was valid for up to a year after you're done. I quit. I moved on to the PlayStation job, and I can talk about that horrible hellhole in October. That's when the NDA expires. I don't remember the exact date, so it might actually be November that I can actually talk about how insanely stupid that place was. But nonetheless, I moved on to doing PlayStations, and the pay sucked. The hours were good, it was local to home, but the pay was deplorable, and I did not agree with their practices of how they repaired units and sold them back to the public. Again, I don't really want to get into that. I don't want to get into any legal issues of me saying the company name and all that kind of thing, but I did not agree with how things were being serviced and being provided back to the public. I thought it was very shady and shoddy and half-assed. And that's what we were given to work with. And I had to leave that. Like I said, one, it was offering a pretty crappy service. And two, the pay sucked anyways. It was not worth staying there. So now I am making automotive paint, which is a world difference from what anything I've ever done. I gotta say, it's way out of left field for me. I went from doing, computer and techie and electronic stuff to something that's completely 180 of what I've ever done. Do I really enjoy it? Honestly, no. Does it pay well? Yes, it does. It pays, like, I'm not rich, don't get me wrong, but let me put it to you this way. My car's paid off. I have no credit card debt. I'm going to be going on vacation soon, which is 100% paid for before even leaving. Like, I'm talking plane tickets are fully paid for. All the U.S. funds that I need to go away with, 100% paid for. There is zero debt for this trip going, and I will be returning with having zero debt from the adventure. So things are looking up for James, James and the household here with Amanda. Now I am working nights, which is the first time I've done that in forever since we've been married, and that's a little bit of a strain on the marriage, because we used to see each other every day, and now it's like 2 weeks out of the month we don't have dinner together, that kind of thing. So it's been a change, but albeit a necessary change, I will say that. Like I said, financially, it made sense. You gotta bite the bullet here and there. And like I said, I had to bite the bullet from the other one. The pay sucked, and I was like, you know what? I could have my every evening at home and struggle with funds, or I could actually make some half-decent cash, and we could actually do fun things and not be worried about going into debt just for doing a simple outing. So there's its positives, there's its negatives. Again, this isn't where I want to be in life, but it's the best possible place that I could be at this specific time, just because it financially makes sense. And yeah, just in terms of general life itself, it's close to home. Like I said, working nights sucks, but Take it as it comes. I'm still actively searching for something else that's more geared for my strengths, but hey, you know what? That's just kind of way life is sometimes. You got to take the good with the bad, and luckily for me at this point, as much as I'm not enjoying it, I'm going to put it more on the good than on the bad side. From there, I had a horrible ankle sprain. It was so severe that the lady, that's highly unprofessional. The doctor, it was a female doctor that had serviced my visit, and she had explained to me that in some cases, and especially in my case, it probably would have been more beneficial if I had just broken the ankle than sprained it. It would have actually been less painful. That was horrendous pain. It didn't help that Amanda and I had a overnight adventure planned for our anniversary. Anyways, I did that the morning of that, of all days. We blew time getting that taken care of, and then I got an air cast. She's like, we don't have to go. I'm like, the room's already paid for. We've already planned on this for 2 months ago. We have a reservation at a restaurant that we really enjoy. There's a brewery that I like out there that we visit whenever we go up there anyways. I like to get a couple of brews, like, right off of the taps from there. I'm like, I don't care. We're going. I'll sit in a wagon or something. You can pull me if you have to. I don't care. We're going. That was probably the best and worst decision. One, I thoroughly enjoyed the entire evening. I will say that. As much as I was hobbling around town with this air cast and looked like a sorry medical anomaly. It was good. Like I said, we went to the microbrew, loved it. Went to dinner at this place called the Court Jester. They have incredible pub food. Like, I mean, to die for pub food. There's been times where it's like, okay, we want the Court Jester, we're not going to stay overnight in this area. Let's just make that 50-minute drive and go and eat there anyways. It's that good of food. And that place fills up. You got to call days in advance to get a seat on a Saturday night. That night, it was throbbing pain. After I'd stopped and laid down in bed for the evening and took that air cast off, the turmoil of hobbling around all day. Like I said, it was worth it for the fun that we enjoyed. But it was pretty much in tears up until 4 a.m., until I actually slept for like an hour and a half. It was awful. I do not encourage anyone go out and purposely get a sprained ankle, because it really sucks, especially if you do it severe like I did, needing an air cast. That was brutal. It hobbled me up for a good couple of weeks. But that obviously really tore me down for a chunk of the summer too. And lastly has been a transformation in the basement. By transformation, I mean it has been a massive, massive cleanout. I had so much crap and stuff that had been accumulated, and it's something that I've been wanting to tackle for literally years. You go down in the basement, you're like, oh, the pile just keeps growing. You look at it, and you're like, ugh, you know, I could get started on that. I really want to get started on that. I want this out of here. I want the space. But then you're like, oh, where do I start? This is going to take forever. Finally said, screw it, and just went into it nose first, cleaning it out a section at a time. Stuff that's not even worth anything, like I'm talking not even worth throwing up to the local value village. Been pitching those in multiple bags and boxes. There's been electronic recycling. There's been stuff for yard sale, which actually did go up to my mom's trailer and did a yard sale up there. I found a ton of stuff for sale at home, whether it be through Berry Game Exchange, possibly the Durham swap in the future. I could do Kijiji ads, as much as I despise dealing with, you know, no shows and stuff. I could do a lot of it through Kijiji. It's been a massive cleanout. As of right now, I'm sitting about 80% cleaned out for the basement, and it's been therapeutic, to say the least. Absolutely therapeutic. It's like a weight has been lifted off. It's not done, but it's done to the point where I was able to clean out a nice corner. I have a green screen up. I have a very ghetto setup for Twitch right now. I can't stream upstairs anymore. I find the upstairs to get way too hot in the summertime. It's just stupid. You sit up here for 5 minutes, and as soon as you got something going up here, it's too hot. And even in the wintertime, after like half an hour, I still find it's too hot up here. You got to open the door, it's still too hot. So I moved all my main components downstairs into the basement. Middle of summer, I need a sweater and slippers down there. It's so cold. It's glorious. Absolutely glorious. So any of you guys that have caught any of my recent Twitch streams, I've slowly been adding things. I put up some cheapo LED lights. They were, oh goodness, $21 a piece from Home Depot. I bought two of them, so that was about $45 with tax. They do really well. Like I said, I got the green screen. I grabbed a really nice gaming chair. Gaming chair is maybe a bit loose. It looks like a gaming chair. It has that fancy aesthetic to it with the red attributes and, you know, a hole cut out in the rear part where your head sits. It looks like a very nice chair. I got that. That was actually a Kijiji buy for $110. And it's a really nice chair. And normally I would not buy something used like that. I really wanted a gaming chair, though, or at least a nice one, because what I had down there was complete garbage. I'd sit on that for like 20 minutes and my ass would hurt. This thing here is really comfortable. I went to the person's house. I sat in it first. It was nice and comfy. I find a lot of these chairs, you can find them cheap-ish for like, I think, $150 on the very low end, up until like $500-$600+. The problem with a lot of them, though, that are the very cheap ones, it's online. You can't sit in it. You don't really know what you're getting until you get it shipped to your house and assemble it. If you don't like it, you're screwed. If you want to try and return it, it's still a pain in the butt and a hassle. You got to take it apart again. I didn't want to deal with any of that. Like, I would rather buy a used chair that is in brand new condition and, you know, buy brand new. Don't get me wrong. There's been times when I go to pick up an ad that I see online, like, oh yeah, it's brand new. You get there and the thing's half mutilated. This thing here was actually like it felt like it came right out of the box. I even asked him, why are you getting rid of it? It's like brand new. And like, oh, just want a better one. I'm like, well, this thing's actually pretty darn nice for me. I'm not picky. They wanted to buy like one of the $500 DX racers or something. Like, oh, this is all right. I bought it like 3 months ago, but it was a smoke-free home, pet-free home. I said, screw it. I'm buying this chair. And it has been so much fun being able to get into Twitch on a regular basis. I've been on there maybe, what, every, I want to say on the average every 2 to 3 days I'm popping on there. There's been a couple of days where I can marathon it, like, you know, 2 or 3 days in a row, and then maybe I'll be off for 2 days and then back on for one. It's been great, though. It's been something that I've been wanting to do for a very long time. And now that I have a very ghetto mock studio space set up downstairs to do it properly, with the green screen and the lights, and like I said, not sweating my arse off upstairs, it's good. I feel pretty liberated. Like I said, between the clean out of the basement being a weight off my shoulders, being a little bit more financially stable, that's a weight off my shoulders. Just genuinely being able to do the things that I want to do, and being happy that I'm being able to be to just do it. So that's kind of where I've been over the past 3-4 months or whatever this show went the toilet for with no uploads. But nonetheless, it was therapeutic. I enjoy where I am now, and I'm fairly happy for what it is at this time. So hopefully I can bring this positivity and energy to future episodes on the future months. Anyways, thanks for catching out this episode this time, and I will catch you within the next one.